Welcome to Educators Unplugged, bridging the gap between the books and real life. I'm your host, April Zalaki. Today I have Keisha Rumbert on the podcast. Keisha is an assistant professor and DEIB, Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Belonging Coordinator at National Lewis University, as well as an Equity, Justice, Anti-Oppression Consultant. I'm excited to have Keisha here today with me so we can dig into the new diversity teaching standards that are dropping here in Illinois. So welcome to the podcast, Keisha.
Thank you so much. Excited to talk about it.
Excellent. I'm so glad you could carve out some time to make it over here to College of DuPage so we can chat about all of this. So can we start with you telling me a little bit about yourself and your journey as an educator?
Sure. I like to think of myself as a forever middle school educator. So I started out teaching seventh grade and ended my career in middle school as an eighth grade teacher and absolutely loved it. I know that that sounds strange to people who do not know middle schoolers, but it's just such a formative time. And I loved it and taught U.S. history and English, which just are my passions and loves. And so I am now doing that for future educators. So that kind of comes full circle for me, which is really cool to be able to prepare. It was cool to be a middle grades teacher and that energy of the classroom, but then extending that energy to future educators is also just another joy and another level of excitement.
Absolutely. I think, you know, well, I came from middle school also. And both of my colleagues that are full-time here also came from middle school.
We're the best.
I feel like we need to do some kind of like outreach or finding out who all of our middle school friends are, because maybe, you know, it takes a special person to teach middle school. And
absolutely.
Maybe we all find our way here to higher ed together. I don't know.
Well, I always say I taught middle school to right my own middle school wrongs. I was that awkward kid
sure.
in middle school. So I'm like, yeah. I just went on to relive that experience to correct all my issues
right.
as
absolutely.
A middle schooler. So
yes.
hopefully I did that. I'm
yeah.
not sure.
Well, I'm certain your students appreciated you. So can you tell me, what do you love most about your current position at National Lewis?
I think it's impact. I think being able to really bridge theory to practice and seeing students, it's not much different than middle school now that I'm talking about it, because it's being able to see that evolution of growth in a student and to see people come in so passionate about the career field and to know that they're going to impact hundreds of students, that one student that I teach might impact hundreds and thousands of students, and that's just exponential. It's like so exciting to me. Mm-hmm. And that I get to have now friends in the field mm-hmm. that, you know, like now it's like, oh my goodness, I know a teacher that teaches here. I know a teacher that teaches there. And I still have that connection to the classroom through my students. It's also, because that's really important. I think sometimes when you get in higher ed spaces, that disconnection makes mm-hmm. you feel vulnerable. Like, do I still know what is happening in the classroom? And so still having that connection is really important to me.
Absolutely. That connection, I've talked about that with a few different people on the podcast too, like how it's easy to become disconnected mm-hmm. in higher education if you just kind of, you know, bury yourself in the education world or the higher education world, because it's very different from K-12 life.
It is. And also, I didn't teach eighth grade during the pandemic. I wasn't a K-12 teacher during the pandemic. So I don't have that experience, and I want my students to understand that experience. So I have to go back into the classroom and see how students are different than when I taught. And I got a chance to also visit a number of classes during the pandemic as a guest, which is different, but still being part of the classroom at as many critical stages as I can, I think makes me a better teacher.
Absolutely. So at National Lewis, what kinds of classes do you teach?
So I am responsible for the foundations classes. So I teach the history of educational philosophy, which is one of my favorites now. I think it's that history piece that I love.
Sure.
Children's Lit, the English teacher in me loves that. Equity in Education, which is a course that I wrote and developed, the first of its kind in our program, which is, they're all my favorite. I feel like they're like my children. And then an Ethics in Education class. So those are the classes that I am responsible for teaching as well as staffing. And then throughout the program, this term I'm teaching culturally responsive pedagogy to secondary English teachers. Cool. So the variety of different things that I teach, but those core classes are the ones that I'm really responsible for.
That's awesome. So you get to see students at different developmental levels on their journey.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly. Really neat. I love seeing that progression, you know, in the students. They really do, you know, some like on the daily, sometimes it's easy to be like, oh, that, you know, not very much, or it doesn't seem very, you know, that like I covered that much ground. But then, you know, when you check in and you're like, hey, wait a minute, they've made some big progress, you know, in a relatively short amount of time. I think a semester in life is relatively short amount of time.
I have a student now and I'm like, who are you? You are a different student than when I had you your sophomore year. Like, he's senior, he's student teaching, and just the evolution of the thought process and the criticality and just even the care given to students. I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm so proud of you. I can't wait to be a fly on the wall in your classroom.
Yeah. Have you happened to see any of your former middle school students in your classes or in higher ed? Have you encountered any of them?
No, but a funny story. I was in class and I was talking about one of my colleagues, and a student's eyes got big. And I was like, that's kind of weird. And after class, she's like, I had her. And I was like, oh my goodness, when did you have her? She had her the year before. So she went to the school that I taught, but was on a different team and talked about it. And then another time during the pandemic when we were teaching online, I brought a bunch of guest speakers in, and I try to also have practicing teachers speak often in the class. And one of the teachers who spoke, one of her former second grade students was in the class.
Oh.
And told her that she was the reason that he became a teacher.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So I haven't had any of my middle schoolers yet, but just seeing that from afar has just been like so amazing.
Yeah, you love those connections.
Absolutely.
And all of that stuff. Oh, that's so sweet. That's very cool. It's awesome when that works out, right?
Exactly.
I love that.
And she's like, you are a teacher? So it's always the ones you least expect it. So be careful.
Absolutely. So shifting gears a little bit, how did your work lead you to becoming involved with the new diversity teaching standards in Illinois?
So it actually started while I was still a middle school teacher. So I was in a policy fellowship in the state, and we had done some policy work around recruiting and retaining teachers of color. And we'd written a couple of white papers, had done some presentations around it. So when the state opened up an application process for the development of the culturally responsive teaching and leading standards, it just seemed like a natural evolution of the work. And they were also at that point talking about having a sub-segment of that work around recruiting and retaining teachers of color. And so, because really when this work started, we weren't sure what this was going to develop into.
Sure.
So I started as a middle grades teacher with a number of stakeholders from higher ed to students. There were a number of students involved in the creation
really?
Of the standards. Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it was really cool because we did it over the process of 2 years, I think. We got a chance to see seniors, and then we saw them in their college dorm rooms still engaged in the work, but that had not lost that connection and were still committed to the standards themselves. So that's really how I got involved, through just policy advocacy, which really evolved me as an educator, to be honest. So that work became important to ensure that teacher voice was part of the development of any standards in the state.
Absolutely. So that's really neat. So you didn't set out necessarily to be on that path, but
no,
just kind of
it's a natural evolution.
Ended up there. Yeah. That's amazing. Awesome. So for you, what do you think is the most important part for future educators to know about the standards? Like, if this is new to them or they haven't experienced them, haven't dug into them at all, what do you think, like, where do they start? What's most important?
So the standards were developed almost in concentric circles so that you start with self and identify your own positionality, identify the different elements of self and how that impacts systems of oppression. And so I always think that it's important to think about who you are and all the identities that you hold and unpacking all of those identities and how all of those identities show up in the form of teaching and learning. So thinking about your own even past experiences as a student. And so I was a little Black girl in the South Side of Chicago. How did that impact me? How has it impacted me as now a Black woman in higher ed? And thinking about all of those things and then bringing that understanding to the standards themselves. Because if we are absent from the standards, we're not going to implement them with fidelity.
Absolutely. So it takes a lot of work to dig into all of that and all of those layers to really unpack where you have come from, right?
Absolutely. They're not, I'm really, really proud of them. I'm so proud of them. They are not checklist standards.
Sure.
They are not, you aren't going to just be able to go in the classroom and check off that you have an inclusive poster on the wall. The first subset of standards, those first three standards are standards I call the self standards. So they're really, it is that internalized work that doesn't show up necessarily in the front facing classroom, but that if you don't do the work, they show up in the classroom, if
sure.
that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we don't even start with students. We start with self, and then we evolve to students. And how do you then create opportunities for student advocacy? How do you create avenues, even with the little babies, the kindergartners? How do you create opportunities to co-create lessons and instruction with them? How are you building on the community that is education itself?
So it is really changing the dynamic and changing the whole process, really, because, I mean, when I went through teacher education almost 20 years ago, right? That's
you can say
scary
it. It's
to
okay.
say. So when I went through that, these types of conversations weren't even had, right? And
no.
So it's really evolved, and I think exciting to think that we do bring our experiences to our students and just kind of like, aha, you know? Absolutely. Like,
absolutely.
It makes a difference what you're bringing.
Yes.
To
and
the table.
Culture is integral into that. If we think about how we process information, that we process it first culturally. So when we think about how our brain works, our brain filters that first through our identities. And so knowing that and understanding that and understanding, too, I know that we live in a time where there are certain buzzwords that scare us. Uh-huh. And so it's important for me to just state here that we all have a culture, that none of us are without a culture. And so the goal of these standards is to ensure that no child is not seen, appreciated, and valued for who they are in the classroom. And knowing that we can build relationships and build curricula that really affirms them and that really grows them to not only understand their culture, but others too, as we live in this global society.
Absolutely. Yeah, just very different conversations. And I'm so thankful that we can start to dig into this and just appreciate not only ourselves and our own cultures,
yes.
but other people's cultures. And this is not a question that I had on mm-hmm. my agenda here, but what do you think about like people seeing color? Mm-hmm. Can I ask you that
Absolutely.
Question? Is that an okay question
Absolutely.
For me to ask you?
Yeah, because when I think about my identities, one of the first things that I'll say to someone is that I'm a Black woman. Well, it's a visible identity for me.
Sure.
And I have myriad invisible identities, but I don't want that to be discarded. Especially, I'm a nerdy history person. So there's so much history in that, and there's so much pride, and there's so much love in who I am. And so I would think that we all have pieces of our identity that are so important to us, and to negate any part of that would feel like you're being to some extent erased or misunderstood to an extent. So I want my color is obviously visible, and I want people to acknowledge that, because with that comes so much, and so much pride and joy.
Sure.
So to talk about that is so important.
Absolutely. I think sometimes, like, even as a mom, right? And so, you know, if people are saying things, sometimes it can be hard. And with students in my classroom and going out to different classrooms and all that, and they bring all of those experiences back and having those discussions and them having teachers that have different opinions and all of that, you know, so all of that can be confusing, I guess. And so if we kind of more dig into the work of the standards and are able to identify and settle into that work, I think, then I think that benefits the students and their future students so much.
Absolutely. And it's not just, it is brain work. So I love Zaretta Hammond's culturally responsive teaching in the brain, because I think it gives us this other avenue to have these conversations. So while it is important to see me as a person and to see and to understand my experience, it's also steeped in how my brain works and how each of our brain works. And we know that learning is a science, and to understand those learning pathways and to be able to negotiate how people's brain operates is important to learning. And so it's foundational to learning, even to understand the cultures of the students in front of us and culture writ large.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's excellent work I appreciate you doing that work, right? And helping, being part of that process to develop those standards. But I think as higher education institutions, we're just scratching the surface for the work that needs to be really done.
Oh my goodness. In my own writing, what I'm finding is that we like to put things in buckets. And so culturally responsive teaching is a bucket. Anti-oppressive teaching is a bucket. Social justice teaching is a bucket. But these are all critical pedagogies that we need to all have in our repertoire. So it's even much bigger. I would love for the state to evolve as other states have done, and even have equity standards and to have larger anti-racist standards, so that we are understanding the brevity of all of these different ideas and acknowledging them.
That would be great. I think having you maybe come and do more, you know, present, I'm certain that you are asked to do different presentations and all that stuff quite often. But
I love it.
I think just having your voice and your confidence in speaking about these things, because they can be, you know, sometimes people get nervous.
Absolutely.
To have discussions and stuff like that. So I think you're just such an expert and someone that I value all of your knowledge and all that stuff so much. So for a teacher that's currently like an in-service teacher, what do you think the best way would be for them to familiarize themselves with the standards or start to think about the standard, you know, their past teacher prep?
Yes.
So what can they do?
That was something that we struggled with as a committee, because we knew that these standards were going to be implemented into teacher preparation programs, into ed prep programs. And so what does that mean for the gap that exists between future educators and people already in the classroom? Well, the state has done a really great job of adding resources to their website for current educators. So there are trainings for each one of the standards on the state's website. And I would encourage educators in your PLC time, If you don't have PLC time in with a community of people that you know and trust, to go through those and look through those. And if you want more training, you can reach out to the state because they, I think, have a list of people who are trainers to be able to facilitate that learning for folks in need.
Okay. Well, because I think that there is a gap, right? And I think it's quite a year, like quite a number of years that gap will exist for. It's kind of like when the Common Core was implemented.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep. I remember
that. Yes, I do. So I think that eventually we will get to the place where everyone's on the same page again, but I think that it will be some years, before we kind of get to that point.
And we've created, by not introducing it to current teachers, we're creating a friction. I'm seeing even when we have our students in practicum classes and in student teaching classes, because they are familiar with the standards and ready to implement, where the teachers, their mentor teachers are like, what are you doing?
Sure.
This isn't part of my lesson.
Yeah.
Like, so there's that tension there that we need to resolve too.
Sure. That's a great point. I actually didn't think about even being in the same classroom.
Yes.
Those two different voices and experiences that they're bringing in there. Interesting. Well, it'll be interesting to see how the state does continue to implement those things and how much we can just continue to get the information out to institutions and just to teachers in general. Do you want to tell me a little bit about your books that you have written?
Well, my book is The Anti-Racist English Language Arts Classroom, and it was published in September. And
congratulations.
Thank you. It was a labor of love, and took a lot of overcoming imposter syndrome to write, because why me to write this book? But I loved it because I learned so much. And what I'm most proud about is that this is a collective effort. So I interviewed over 40 educators via surveys, over 100 educators, interviewed numerous students, have included the voice of 7 students in the book. And so this is, and teachers from all across the nation contributed so that I had myriad voices that spoke to what anti-racist means to them, because I don't think it is one thing. I think it is many things depending on your context. And also wanted to explore the experience of teachers in states where this work is not seen favorably, and how they were navigating that in the best interests of their students. Because I believe that all educators are working. I do believe this, and I hope that this is true, that all educators are working in service of their students and in service of a better society in the end. And so for people who in states and legislations that are really pushing against this work, I think my goal in writing the book was to just identify that this work helps humanity, that this is humanity work, that this isn't cause for friction. This is actually cause for harmony and for repair. And so that's what I hope that people take away from the book. And I've written it in a way that I hope that people can enter into it at whatever stage of the journey that they're in and find themselves in it.
That's awesome. Well, I'll definitely link the information for your book in the description of the podcast. So if people are interested in purchasing the book or just kind of getting more of a glimpse into your brain a little bit through your writing, that would be awesome. Well, thank you so much, Keisha, for being here today and joining me on the podcast. I always learn so much from chatting with you. So thank you for sharing your expertise with our listeners.
Thanks so much for having me.
Please join me for the next episode of Educators Unplugged, where I interview another expert in the education field.